What's good, everyone? Welcome back to the Matchnet Podcast. I'm with my sister here, my sister from GOP. We went to GOP together.
Yeah.
That was, how many years ago was that?
Oh my gosh. That was what, 04, 05?
04. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was to this,
so that was year. 20 years ago.
10, I was about to say 10 years ago, but it was 20 years ago. That's insane. So yeah. Yoshie and I have a past of throwing water balloons at each other and dumping ice cold buckets of water and, other mischievous deeds that you go into do in GOP that are not going to be uttered here on the podcast.
Shout out to GOP. It's still going. And I think they're accepting applications for this.
I was talking with Andrew Love. We were in person doing like a staff high noon thing. And then his wife wants their kids to go, their three boys to go to GOP.
Oh,
but all Andrew hears is the horror stories from me and Sammy. Just a lot of
that Korean out of it.
But I keep telling him it's a completely different age. GOP is a completely different set of people, like a different generation of people, different rules, different location. And the people I talked to recently that have been there,
close to your mother.
Yeah. Very different. People that go there recently are like really high caliber, dedicated, like I want to learn Korean and I'm gonna go in like that kind of spirit. So very different.
And honestly, like even in those wild days, you know, what came out of it is that Korea still feels like home to me. And that's not nothing.
Even though it's challenging, it's still home, right?
Yeah.
So, you know that feeling when you get into the Incheon Airport and you just like smell the Korean air? It's like there's something about it. It's like excitement and stirring a whirlwind of events and blessings, that kind of stuff. That's like my favorite feeling in the world. It's going into Incheon, getting ready for a big event or something like that. Smelling the Korean air. People say it's pollution. I just call it Korean air. I don't know.
Sometimes when I'm walking down the street in New York City, I get a flashback to Korea. But it could just be like the trash on the ground. Korea is also a pretty different place than it was when we were there 20 years ago.
That's very true. Oh my goodness, the infrastructure. New York City. We both were working in headquarters together as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
New York City. I remember one time walking, I was so jaded in New York. I lived there for 4 years. I biked every day with my bicycle, winter storms, because it was infinitely more enjoyable than taking the bus. It's like a net negative taking the bus and everyone's miserable and hates it. And then I got a bike and then it became a net positive. So I turned turning lemons into lemonade. And it was like my favorite thing in the world in New York was just biking from New Jersey to New York. And I did that through winters and freezing, you know, blizzard and stuff. Oh, anyways, I remember being very jaded in New York because I was looking at just the trash and the people and all the stuff. And just that it's just a mix of complicated spirit worlds and emotions and all the people that have no, like, there's no clear like way of living. It's just everything everywhere, which is the beauty of America and New York, right? But my Japanese side was like, just have a standard. Like, can we just have standardized living to some extent, you know?
Yeah.
And my British side is like that too, my mom's side. And then I went home and I was like so angry. And I was telling my wife, I was like, I just can't stand New York. Everywhere I look is just degeneracy. And it's driving me crazy. And then she said, well, Benji, why don't you look at the sky when you walk? And so I started doing that. Because if you look at the sky in New York City, it's like, you know, high rise skyscrapers. And there's a sliver of beautiful sky right there.
Yeah.
And I just, when I walk through the city, I just look at the sky. I'm like, wow, this is nice, you know? And so Hito had gave me a nice learning lesson about life is if you focus on the negative, then you just become negative. If you focus on the hardship and the fallen nature, then it brings out that fallen nature in us as well. And so that was gratitude for me. Anyways, Yoshie, how are you today? We'll get into the topic now.
I'm doing good. Yeah. I had a baby and so my whole world is now kind of revolved around that. And it's very exciting. And, you know, like the practical stuff is what it is.
I know it.
Yeah. Had a little bit of a rough night of sleep, but besides that, I'm very happy. He's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, you are. I just saw you and your husband Matthew in Korea for the Blue Dragon mm-hmm. thing. And you guys seemed, I mean, stressed and tired, obviously. Jet lag with a baby. There's no freaking joke. It's actually like hell.
Yeah.
Like baby, I know. But you guys seem genuinely happy and despite that. And that was moving actually. It was really pleasing to see, especially in the group of a bunch of, you know, single folks, guys and gals in the Blue Dragon thing. But this is an important development for you. This is last time you were on the podcast. We did an episode about your matching journey.
Yeah, I was very newly blessed, wasn't I?
Yeah, and you were
talking. Oh, I'm pretty newly blessed, but anyway, I've got a couple years and a baby now, so.
But I wanted to have you back on here because that episode is actually one of our most popular ones. And not just popular, but also referenced a lot when I'm talking with matching candidates or people I'm mentoring. People mm-hmm. often refer that to that episode because it brings a lot of context for what trying hard looks like. People's like, oh, I tried for a year, 2 years, and I like nothing happened. I went to these workshops. And then when they hear that story, it's like, wow, that's like, I haven't done anything, you know? And it just breaks a belief that I think people subconsciously have and assume. So I'm going to give the floor to you now because we wanted to get into really your journey of, you, as you put it, not me, mistakes that you've made and things that you would have avoided or would pass on as kind of lessons learned. So take us away.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's funny that you brought up Korea, Benji, or this last trip to Korea, because I think in preparing for this trip to Korea, I thought about my first matching process, actually, like, has Korea, Chumpyeong as a backdrop. I was like freshly off of STF. I guess this was like the summer afterwards, and 18, 19 years old, totally thought I was ready. And I get into a process with a brother who I was actually, you know, on a team with when I was on STF. So we knew each other well. You know, adding this new kind of context into things really kind of for the first time, it threw me for a loop. I didn't really know what to do. This is 2011 or something like that. I guess Skype is a thing, but Zoom isn't. But we started out just kind of chatting on Facebook Messenger. We would write like kind of really long messages to each other, practically letters, like every 3 days. And that was how we did things for the first 3 months. And then we decided to go to Chumpyeong. And
as you do after messaging people, somebody for a little bit.
But I think, you know, for me, I was like, it's not because of the matching process. It's because, like, genuinely, I want to go to Chumpyeong. And for him, it was, no, I'm there to get to know Yoshie, right? Mm-hmm. I think I was trying to protect myself, you know, and have that kind of like a little bit of an out. So I had heard from the grapevine that there was another couple that did it, that went to Chumpyeong the year before. They reported that they were in a matching process to their workshop, you know, leader. And they kind of got permission to spend some time getting to know each other, you know, after closing, stuff like that. And I thought, great, let's do that. Let's report. So I reported to Impyopa, who was at the time he's like the leader of the Western group in Chumpyeong. So I think what the previous couple had done was they just talked to like the workshop, whoever was like the workshop leader for that one workshop. We talked to like a little bit of a head honcho, and he was kind of totally taken aback. He's like, I've never heard of something like this. I have to, you know, figure out what, you know, the situation is. Please don't talk to each other until I do. And then he came back and he was like, Daminem was worried that people would come here. That's not the purpose of coming to Chumpyeong. So please don't talk to each other. And I was like, great, I won't talk to him. And so I spent, you know, 21 days ignoring him pretty much. And that was the end of that matching process. Like a rough entry, you know. I think I did all the things that one is not supposed to do in a matching process in that first one. And then besides that, he, you know, had been communicating with his parents the entire time he was in Chungpyeong, and letting them know what the situation was. And I hadn't been communicating with my parents. And so when the process ended, I think my dad was kind of blindsided by it, and it affected my relationship with my parents, and the fact, you know, and it really kind of put me back a lot of years in my matching process, actually, I think, because there were things that had to be repaired on my, you know, on the side of my parents. I still think about it and I still cringe a little bit, and that's why I reached out to you. Because I was like, I don't know, it is a big ick, like the whole thing to me, it feels like one big matching ick. So if I was going to break it down of like what not to do, the first thing is, even if you know the person, to try to get on a call or see each other in person as soon as possible. ideally not not for such a long period of time. Yeah, definitely don't just ignore the person. And I would say, you know, like, don't go to Chungpyeong as a first matching, you know, process. That being said, like, you know, going back there this year, there's all these lovely cafes and stuff. And I don't know, given the right kind of situation, it might actually be a really nice place to get to know somebody now.
How was that experience actually, in hindsight, a benefit to you, and actually something that you could be grateful for?
I mean, even at the time, he was somebody that I got along really well with when we were, you know, on STF together. And I think he's one of the few people who I felt like, oh, he's actually my brother. And I think that was one reason why it kind of was a little jarring for me to get into a matching process with him. But I'm really, even at the time, as soon as it was over, I felt so grateful that I could have had that experience with him. I think it did teach me a lot about how to kind of conduct myself moving forward. And I took those lessons with me into each kind of subsequent process.
So when you first had the idea came up to be in a matching process, in that first matching process, what would you have done differently, knowing what you know now, when the idea first came up?
The reality was that he was ready and I wasn't. That's why he got married 8 years before I did. I was really scared, and I think I actually hadn't done the work to know myself and know what kind of person would be, you know, good for me. And so I liked the idea of being, you know, matched and being in a relationship. But when I was faced with the reality and like a real person, and, you know, maybe this person in particular, like I think I'm right, you know, in thinking that we weren't the right people for each other. But I had like alarm bells going off from the start. Like I was like nervous and shaking, you know, like to read his messages and stuff. And that was kind of what was fueling the way I acted when we like ended up in Korea together. What would I have done differently? I think, yeah, to talk to 19-year-old Yoshie, I would tell her to like listen to her gut and intuition. If it feels like something's off, it's because it is, but it's not necessarily that person. Like, why are you so uncomfortable, Yoshie? and I didn't know how to communicate well enough to my parents either. And so they didn't know what was going on, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. Like,
so,
yeah.
So you mentioned that the aftermath of this matching process was that your relationship with your parents kind of set you back a bit, set your matching processes back a bit. And so do you feel like it would have been better to communicate with them?
Totally. But I think I didn't, like, this is stuff that I wasn't even really willing to admit to myself, right?
Yeah.
So how do you put into words something like that?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you know, it would have been better, but also your relationship was not such that you felt comfortable to talk to them, right?
Yeah. 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 And again, the reality was that I didn't know myself. And so how could I, you know, be able to kind of explain to my parents what was going on?
I think the matching process is one of the best ways to improve a match parent-child relationship, because it confronts a lot of stuff that has to come up, especially if you're trying to create unity, which is the byproduct of trust. And if trust is the goal in a matching process, it will bring up a lot of stuff when you're trying to develop trust with each other. And you realize actually there's a lot of distrust in many parent-child relationships. Actually, in fact, most, this is usually when people are like, oh, like our parent-child relationship is so bad and we're so disunited and this is hard. And I always say, well, this is actually the best case scenario, is that you have an opportunity through the matching process to get to know each other and to get to know yourselves and to improve this. Yeah. And so the goal should not be, how do we be united, which is a nice goal, but actually unity is a fruitless effort if there's no trust. And so trust should be the focus. It's like, how can we trust each other? Because if you trust somebody, you will unite with them. If you seriously trust your parent, or if a parent trusts their child, even if you disagree with them, you will say, wow, like why do you think so? Like, why do you think this is a good idea to go to Chumpyeong and to get to know this brother, Yoshie, right? If you had a trusting relationship, you know, and your parents would have said, you know, I don't think this is a good idea. And if you really trust them, you'd be like, okay, like, tell me why you think that is. And you'll have discussion about it. And so matching process is the ultimate litmus test for a parent-child connection, you know, because all this stuff comes up, faith, disagreements about beliefs, right? All this stuff, sexual integrity, shadows, preferences, all this stuff. And then it's an opportunity to not say like, oh, this is a problem, but it's like, okay, cool. This is something we're going to have to work on eventually. And we might as well do it now, you know, especially when you guys have kids, babies. It's nice to have parents that you can kind of rely on for physical support or emotional support to help you through that raising kids as well.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, the process that I had right before I met Matthew, yeah, it didn't, you know, obviously, like, it didn't end in a matching. But I really actually thought of it as a, like, success story, because I was so on the same page with my parents. You know, this is, again, like 9.5, 10 years later. But the level of, you know, hyper communication that we had, you know, from the start. And then, you know, like, you know, I was older, I was kind of driving the process myself. It got to a certain point, and, you know, he had to come visit my parents. And so we both went to California for a week. Especially during that time and immediately after, and the way that my parents and I communicated about it. And I think we were kind of on the same page that it wasn't gonna work, but we decided to do, you know, a condition, you know, to make sure that we're doing this together from a, you know, with the right heart and mindset. Yeah, no, I felt really good about the whole thing.
What does hyper communicating look like? Like, what kind of things came up, maybe roadblocks or challenges that you did communicated well about with your parents?
Yeah, I mean, we communicated where I, you know, told them about what I wasn't sure about. I think on my end, it was pretty clear that it wasn't clear before I went to California, but almost as soon as we, you know, got there, it was pretty clear to me that this wasn't going to continue after. And so communicating that and communicating why, yeah, and what it was that I felt. Okay, it's hard to talk about this stuff without, you know, going into like detail. But with this brother, I felt that we really had very little in common. And also there was a big difference in faith. But what was like, what kept him on the table was the fact that he was all in, you know, and committed. And so after, you know, such a long journey, like the fact that there was somebody who's like committed, you know, and on board, like to me, that didn't feel like something that I could just dismiss. Right. But I just didn't know how to like bridge the gap between those two things. Like our faith was very different and like we had very little in common, you know. If it was like one of those two things, maybe we could have figured out how to make something work. But I felt like, yeah, I could marry him, but it would be a long, hard road, you know. And so kind of communicating that to my parents, yeah, and then them also kind of sharing what their, you know, impressions and concerns were, yeah, helped us get on the same page. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds like you went on quite a journey with your folks in that 10-year span of building that trust in each other.
At the beginning, you know, after that first matching process that didn't really work, there were a lot of years of kind of like almost non-starters. You know, we would look at the website and like the people that my parents liked, I didn't like, and the people that I liked, my parents didn't like. And
like shopping and it's like shopping for shoes with your parents when you're a kid. Like your mom's like, how about these beautiful white sneakers? I'm like, no, mom, give me the Power Rangers, like that. Sorry, what can you dig into a bit? What it is it that you didn't like on your end?
My gosh, I mean, we're talking profiles here, you know, like we're going off of very little information, but like, you know, the photo, or like this person doesn't seem like a very personable person. Some of the people my dad would pick out, I already knew. And I was almost offended, you know, that he would think that this would be a good person for me. Again, we're going off of profiles, but yeah, I'm still not exactly sure what it was that my dad was looking for in these profiles.
Well, eventually you said yes to some profiles and matching processes.
Well, so there were a lot of years of this kind of like non-starter situation. And honestly, it got to the point where it felt like we have just exhausted the website. And where do we go from here? My parents felt that their network was really limited. They didn't know as many people as I did. And I think at that point, you know, I was older too. So we had a conversation where they kind of said, like, we need to rely on you more, like your network. And so by them, quote unquote, giving me the reins, it started becoming, a really different process, where I would kind of, anytime I had like a thought or something, then I would, you know, call them and report to them and ask them what they thought. Yes. So that's how that happened. And I think that's when,
sorry, go ahead.
I think that's when things started to pick up again. Yeah.
Is there something you would have done differently when going through candidates or profiles?
Yeah. I think one thing that I learned later on, and maybe like alongside, you know, my 24 plus journey, is that having, you know, a phone call, having a conversation is not like, you know, the end of the world. It's not as stressful as one would, you know, make it out to be. Yeah, I think to always be open to like a first and even a second phone call, I think is something that I would do differently. If I was trying to speed up the clock on, you know, getting matched, you know, like the hard work that I pulled into the end of my journey, if I was trying to pull it into the beginning of the journey, that's something that I would do. That like a profile in and of itself is so little information.
Here's the tough question.
Okay.
If Yoshie at that time saw a profile of your current husband, Matthew, would you have considered having a conversation with
him? Honestly, I think I did see the profile. Yeah, my husband was blessed before. So the first time around, I'm pretty sure I saw his profile. And we did not have a conversation.
You swiped left.
I think I was like intimidated by his face.
Okay.
You know, like this is honestly like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about faces. I think, because, you know, True Father talks about like, you know, things in the face that, you know, like show like a personality type or a character type. Right. I think, you know, my parents, especially my father, kind of believes in that. And even though I have no idea like what the real like science behind it is, or like, you know, what even a wide nose means, or like a strong chin, there were profiles that I was kind of like, I was looking at the face and I was like, no. And not out of a like attraction standpoint, but a like intuition or I don't know kind of standpoint. But in doing that, I did, you know, like I passed over my husband the first time.
Yeah. Dude, I'm just saying, like your bit about having the first conversation is, I mean, it's really spot on, because you literally just swiped left on the person you eventually swiped right on, you know,
10 years,
after having to learn all this stuff. I want to educate y'all, the listeners, about a concept called the Goddard. It's the Goddard law, the Goddard principle, which is the tendency humans have to focus on one metric to define success. And this comes up in all forms of life. And in finding a spouse and in our faith, we have a tendency, I have noticed, to try to look for one specific metric to gauge whether somebody is a good match. And things like face are indicators of personality, but it's not the main thing. And the Goddard principle is that if you only focus on one metric of a good match, then it actually becomes useless, because that's not the main thing. And because you have to kind of approach it from different angles. And another common thing is focusing too much on the shape of the head or the eyes or the thumb thing, right? Father did a matching ceremony, which I participated in, where he made everyone put their hands together, right? And then that actually became, and still is today, the first thing people look at in a match is, are our thumbs the opposite? Well, guess what? Father also matched people himself to people with the same thumbs, like my parents, for example. And so it's actually incredibly detrimental to focus on one specific metric as a gauge for whether this is a good match, because then the result is you start to ignore the really, really important things, you know? And because if you were to have that conversation with Matthew at the time, it could have been a very different story, you know? And this is, of course, you know, there's no regrets in your life, but this is extrapolating and being helpful for people who are going through that situation.
Yeah.
It's like you say yes to having a conversation, as you said, because it's not the end of the world or the beginning of a whole world. You're just having a conversation. And then that's when you get to gauge the real things that matter. Like, what is your faith about? Do you want to have a blessed family? I'm still surprised, Yoshie, that there are people that are like, oh, I don't think I want to have kids, that are getting blessed. Not a lot. There's not a lot. But there are people like that. I'm like, what are you doing? What is the point of the blessing if you're not going to have a blessed family? You know? But talk about that kind of stuff. You talk about your, like, your shadows and see how people respond. I keep saying that for me, that's the greatest, you know, test of someone's character and maturity is if they see your dirt and how do they respond to it?
Yeah.
Do they give you grace or forgiveness or say like, hey, I'm going to try, or they immediately go, nope, sorry, bye. You're not perfect. What? Goodbye. You know? So that's the detriment of only focusing on that stuff is that we're ignoring the really true important internal things. But the case for profiles and why it's valuable, because I know a lot of people will say, oh, we should just not have profiles. The case for that is that it is a really, like, your face, like True Father saying, like you're saying, your being is like a for sale sign. It's like the for sale sign of a house. It's to get somebody in the door, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look like a slob and you don't take care of yourself and you don't put any investment into presenting your house, no one's even going to step foot in the house to see what is inside. No one's going to even give you the light of day to consider your character, the quality of your heart, if you don't present yourself. So that's why the appearance part is important as first impression. But then after you get to know somebody, if you've noticed this, it's like we care less and less about somebody's physical appearance in a romantic relationship or any like friendship as well. Mm-hmm. It's like we get to know them. It's like, oh, that person's cool. I'm going to get to know him or her. And then you get to know them. And then it's like, oh, I don't care about your appearance anymore. I just care about you as a person, as a friend, you know? So there is a case for that as well.
Mm. One of the things that we kind of picked up on from my husband's face was that he must be like a really stubborn person, you know, like kind of difficult to change his mind. Mm. And like, this is actually true about him. Mm-hmm. but he like knows this about himself, and he's also like very smart and willing to be wrong, you know, if he's presented with like other evidence, you know. And so, yeah, it turned out that this thing that we got stuck on, while it is like an actual part of his character, he has found a way, you know, to balance it out in his life, and you know, actually, like, it has either had like no effect on our married life, or, you know, like, because I know this about him, you know, it makes it almost, you know, easier. Like, communication is important. And this is, you know, something that, you know, we talk a lot and we're able to do that. So,
well, that's his character. That's who he is. He was born like that.
Yeah.
And so is True Father, stubborn.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a wise thing to say, like, that's who you are. And let's work through that and let that be a benefit to our family and our couple. Yeah. Right. And a foolish person would say, oh, you're stubborn. That's wrong. That's bad.
Yeah.
I can't deal with that. Yeah. Right.
Guess 10 what? 10 years ago, Yoshie was like that.
And then you marry and you realize, oh, everyone's stubborn. Some people express it on their face more, but I think everyone's stubborn, really. Some people are more stubborn than others, but we're all stubborn. We're all human. Yeah. It's probably a good thing to be stubborn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what else have you learned? Big lessons, things to avoid, mistakes.
As I was like trying to write a list, I think that was the big one. But another one that came up was when you have a first meeting, like I said, you know, 21 days or 40 days is not necessarily the right way to have a first meeting. But even a weekend visit where like there's no kind of interference or anybody else who's like involved in the visit is a lot. So I have had also that experience of like somebody came to visit for a weekend, and I think I didn't quite want to share it with anybody on this coast, you know, that I was in the beginnings of a process. So it was totally up to me to kind of keep him entertained for the whole weekend when I was still trying to work through whether or not this was going to work. And it was it was too much. So one tip that I would, you know, share is like, yes, definitely have a short visit if possible. And if it's not because, you know, it's international or long distance or something, like you have to include other people to make it a more like enjoyable experience. Whether or not you feel confident that it's going well.
Hmm. Can you give advice on how to keep that kind of matching process centered without getting too romantically involved, emotionally involved?
Like during a visit like that?
Yeah, or any matching process in general, but especially, you know, during visits and such.
Wow. I mean, one way is to visit all together with a family, you know, to like for one person to either visit the whole family. I think that would actually kind of knock out two things, right? One, you're not kind of trying to carry the weight of the whole visit on your own shoulders. You have like other people to kind of help navigate that with you. Hard to be romantic when, you know, your parents are like there too, or somebody's parents. In my process with Matthew, he was the only person who ever did this, but I really appreciated it. And I honestly think that it should be a practice that everybody does. We didn't touch each other. Like it was his standard, you know, like for me, like I think within my realm of like brother sister relationship, like a hug, hello and goodbye, like still is okay. For him, like the way he explained it was that, you know, like physical touch is such an important, you know, like love language for him, that he like, you know, finds it hard to get his hair cut, you know, because it feels like almost too intimate. And so this was his like standard, but he like didn't, yeah, there was no hugs, hello and goodbye during the entire 7-month process until after we had decided that we were going to get matched. And while it was something that I didn't expect, because I, you know, I had been hugging other people I was in processes with, I actually, yeah, really appreciated that I didn't feel like there was any kind of expectation on his part. Like I didn't know that, in other processes, I was getting this like feeling or sense of like the hug means something to that person, you know, or like, do they want me to hug them? Like, are they expecting it? Like there were these kind of questions floating in the air for me. And with him, like, it was very clear, like there was no expectation of a hug, hello or goodbye. And so we just wouldn't. And, even after we were matched, he, like wouldn't touch me until like, unless there was like somebody else in the room or we were on a Zoom call and he felt like he was quote unquote being like chaperoned.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for me personally, I have a little bit of a, like my feelings didn't really start growing romantically until after we had commitment. So it was for me, like that sense of security was really important for me to feel safe enough to kind of even start to feel romantic.
Yeah.
And then it was almost like a switch that, you know, flipped and then,
Wow.
So.
That is really important, piece of advice and point, because this is a big question for people, is like, I don't feel romantically connected or attracted to my matching partner. And for a lot of people, that's, I think we've been educated that that's a red flag. And that's the only thing that kind of matters. Again, going back to the Goddard principle, it's like, oh, if I don't feel attraction, then something's wrong. But there are studies done that you can literally create attraction from thin air with a stranger if you just stare into their eyes long enough, right? And there's been way too many cases of people that don't feel attraction at the beginning and then develop it over time, which is real attraction, not a fleeting attraction. It's like a deep, intimate, internal attraction to each other that comes and goes, right? And so then the marriage becomes, how do we maintain a healthy dose of attraction towards each other? So I think that's a beautiful lesson and a belief breaker that you had, that you just, after committing, you felt safe and you felt like, okay, I can romanticize.
I can let go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, yeah. Anyway, people are different, right? I have walls of like self-protection up, you know, like even when buying a house, you know, it was the same, like I wasn't going to get excited about it until, you know, we were already closed, you know, during pregnancy too. It was very interesting, this kind of like relaxation into like, no, we're really going to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And not letting the excitement kind of like get ahead of me. But yeah, it's really true. I think it's something that in earlier processes that I wondered about. And yeah, because in earlier processes, it was the same thing of this, like, yeah, what are you supposed to feel when you're in a matching process? I don't feel attracted, so is this not right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in getting to know Matthew, especially, like knowing that these characteristics and like are what I am looking for, and the way I feel when I'm around him is what I want to feel, you know, with my partner. Not in a romantic way, but like I enjoy spending time with him way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always tell people that's a pretty good indicator. It's just, you enjoy spending time with someone. In other words, another way of saying that is, if you break down what that means, it's you're okay being yourself around.
Yeah.
Someone.
Yeah.
That's what that means. And if you're okay being yourself, as in like letting it all out and like, I'm comfortable being me, that's pretty good indication, I'd say. Not the only indication, but I think that's something to worth noting. And also, if I feel really uncomfortable being with somebody, either it means that I don't know how to be myself, or I feel like they're not mature enough to accept me. And that's a cause for pausing and kind of looking at the relationship. Not saying it's wrong or bad or shouldn't go forward. It's just something to look into for folks, right? Okay, so we're going to wrap up. Do you have any other pieces of advice, tips, mistakes to avoid?
No, I mean, no. Yeah, other pieces of advice, just kind of make sure, yeah, to get on a phone call as soon as possible, try to meet up in person as soon as possible, if it's possible. Have other people there to like alleviate the pressure when you have a first meeting, especially if it's a longer one. Learn to communicate with your parents, and start asking yourself the questions, you know, like, why do I feel uncomfortable in this situation? That kind of stuff. My husband just texted me and told me that the baby seems pretty hungry.
Wow.
If we're in a wrapping up place, it might be good to
keep you,
wrap it
to
up.
Keep you longer and keep the baby hungry, baby boy. Okay. All right. Maybe. Good timing, little man. Guys, please give a hand and thank you to Yoshe for sharing today. Reach out to us if you need support. Reach out to her if you want to. Instagram, yeah. Facebook, perhaps. She's a
yeah.
Mom. She's a blessed woman and has a lot of helpful perspective. Do subscribe, follow the MatchNet podcast, Spotify, Apple, Google, YouTube, all the things, and join the MatchNet course program at matchnet.us if you haven't already. Take yourself through the education process. And righty, thank you, Yoshi. See you later, man. All right. Now feed your little man, take a gander, little boy, and take it home.
Okay. Thanks, Benji.
Thank you, Yoshi. God bless you. Bye.